Welcome to another episode of I Innovate. This is Min.
And this is Julio.
And today we're interviewing Marissa Mayer, the Vice President of Search Products and User Experience at Google.
So Marissa's pretty much the top product person at Google. I think was one of the first people in here. She joined way back when after she graduated and now runs pretty much all the Google products, right?
Right. She basically is involved in a lot of cool launches of the newest products out and definitely a lot of the existing product as well.
Yeah, we had a really good conversation with her about Google, about some of the products, how she thinks about product, and then also just a lot of personal stories about what she'd be doing and some of her hobbies and just her as a person. So we hope you enjoyed this interview. And
Wait, Julio, one more thing.
The
Innovate wants to congratulate Julio and Matt for graduating from their business school. So they've got a lot of promising future aspects coming up, so we'll definitely stay tuned to them. And also, we should definitely go to all their parties up in San Francisco.
I thought Min was going to mention the sponsors, which I did forget. But we did want to thank our sponsors, Lightspeed Venture Partners. You can check them out at lightspeedvp.com for making all this possible.
Thanks for listening. We are at Google headquarters in Mountain View with Marissa Mayer. Marissa, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
You graduated with your CS degree from Stanford, and when you were done, you were deciding among various options, including joining Google when it was just 20 people, consulting, business school, a teaching gig. Can you walk us through how you decided to choose Google at that time?
Sure. It was the height of the bubble, so there were a lot of offers and opportunities, and I had been interviewing with companies through January, February, and March, and over spring break, I decided I would sit down and make my decision. So I sat down over spring break, I thought about what should I use as my criteria, because the jobs were all really different, and I needed to figure out on some level what I wanted to do. And when I thought of a criteria, I started thinking about other really good decisions I had made, decisions that seemed counterintuitive to me at the time. So, you know, I thought about the fact that I decided to go to Stanford sort of at the last minute. I had previously thought I was going to go to Duke, and I switched just on April 27th, much to my mother's fear. choosing Stanford was one. Choosing to work at Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park one summer was one. Another was to go to Switzerland for a summer working in a research lab. And then I thought about, well, all those decisions that made me so happy, what do they all have in common? And I realized that they were very different. You know, some of them were work decisions, some of them were personal decisions, you know, education decisions. But they all had two things in common. One of them is that I always worked with the smartest people I could find. I really think that when you surround yourself with smart people, it causes you to think more deeply about things and really challenge yourself. And that's really, you know, that's one way that you really grow intellectually and achieve more than you thought you could achieve. And I think the other piece is that I always did something I was a little not ready to do, like moving, you know, 2,000 miles away from home into California where I didn't know anyone, or going to program professionally at Stanford Research Institute after taking only 2 quarters of introductory computer science and only knowing C, and they only programmed in Lisp, or moving to Switzerland, and I didn't even speak German. So, you know, in my view, you know, while all of those were sort of scary experiences, at the end of the first day, I remember sitting down on my bed at the end of each one thinking, what have I done? at the same time, they were also really great, because over time, they really caused me to stretch myself and to grow. And I really think that, you know, that's one way that you learn a lot about yourself, is to do something that you're not ready to do and take that risk.
What was it like to work at Google when it was just 20 people?
It was really fun. I mean, it's still really fun today. And interestingly, it hasn't changed that much, because the people that we hire, you know, sort of what motivates them, their value system, is still very much the same. So a lot of times, you know, things still feel very similar. But it was fun. There were, you know, great days where, like, you know, we were on University Avenue in Palo Alto, and so we didn't have a cafe or a cook yet, and so our daily tradition was getting taken out for lunch and dinner. So, you know, Larry and Sergey would say, you know, hey, we're going to Pluto's, or hey, we're going to Miyake's, like, who's with us? And, you know, and, like, everyone would, like, get up from their desk, and we'd all traipse down the stairs in a big sort of pack and go, and, you know, there'd be, like, somewhere between 12 and 20 of us all eating lunch together, and that was, you know, that was really fun. There was a lot of camaraderie there.
So if you were graduating today and Google wasn't around, what would you do?
Well, I still think, you know, Google is a good option for people because I do think there's a tremendous amount of growth. We're still in the state where there's a lot more work than people, which I always would look for scenarios that are like that. So startups have that in spades, right? Because there's so much to do and you're just getting started. And, you know, and you know, there's just way more to do than there is manpower. And I think those are the types of situations that have real possibility and opportunity. Going somewhere where you can sit, where you arrive, and sort of the moment of horror where you're like, all this isn't getting done. Will it ever get done? Will there ever be enough people? And then coming to terms with that and saying, okay, you know, here's what I can do. And like, because there's so much that isn't getting done, I can carve off this big piece, and this is going to be sort of like my niche and my area and where I contribute. And I think that's really, you know, good advice for people who are coming out of school is to, one, to look for opportunities of growth, opportunities where there's a lot more work than people, and also to look for an opportunity where you will be working for someone who will invest in you, right? Because you want someone who is willing to say, you know, okay, I understand this is what you're doing today, but ultimately you want your career to progress and you want to have more responsibility, and making the investment of, one, entrusting you with more responsibility over time, and two, giving you the skill sets, the, you know, approaches, and, you know, just the overall guidance to help you take on larger and larger challenges. So I think those are big key ingredients. I think those are true of Google today, but they're also true of startups and a lot of other opportunities.
What do you think are some hot areas right now to jump in that are going to change a lot or are going to be exciting in the future?
Sure. Well, the obvious one is social networking. I do think that there's a huge amount that still is going to happen in search. And I think that there's a lot of interesting new web technologies that really leverage Ajax. How can you build applications inside the browser that, you know, applications that people would use every day and you know, ultimately really find useful, you know, how do you work on those? So I think those are three areas I'd highlight.
Within social networks, are there any companies that you particularly admire or anything that you think is really cool that we're still waiting for?
Well, sure. So, I mean, I was part of Orkut here at Google as it launched, so I was one of the people who helped get it started. So, while it's not very popular in the U.S., it is the second largest network in the world, second only to MySpace, and it's number one in Brazil and India. So here it doesn't feel very big, but I just came back from India about a month ago, and there, you know, Orkut is the number one website in the country, and people think that Orkut owns Google, not the other way around. And so, like, that's pretty gratifying to see. Like, people use that. That's where all their social interaction comes from. You know, that's where, you know, a lot of the internet use overall comes from. And you talk to people in India, like, they go to cyber cafes in large part to go and use Orkut. So that's really gratifying. And obviously, I have a lot of respect for Facebook. I think the way that they're building their platform, the openness, the way they've structured apps is really compelling and empowering.
What's your favorite Google product?
So I don't pick a favorite Google product because I've been involved with so many of them over the years. And, you know, for me, like, you know, the products are like my children, right? They're something that I work on for months at a time, and I really care about what happens to them and how they grow and change over time. So it's sort of like asking a mother to pick a favorite child. I just really, it's just really not an easy question for me to answer. So there's a lot of them I'm really proud of.
Going on to Gmail, so you coded with the former Googler who basically wrote Gmail. Uh-huh. Can you talk about the story about how Gmail got created with ads on the side, which is really innovative at that time?
Sure. And, well, actually, interestingly enough, the ad placement in Gmail is actually what spawned AdSense, which is now a multi-billion-dollar-a-year business. And it's very confusing from the outside because what happened was Gmail got started. We had this ad prototype on Gmail. We had the observation that we could take that ad prototype and run it on any page, not just email. We kicked off the AdSense product. AdSense launched first, Gmail launched after. So most people think AdSense came before Gmail because that's how it looked from the outside. But interestingly, Gmail was under development that whole time, and it was this idea that caused the AdSense business. And so, of course, this story is a little bit of, well, not a little bit, a lot of egg on my face, sort of, you know, embarrassing for me because I almost shut down what later became AdSense. So Paul and I shared an office, and we were talking. He was the tech lead on Gmail, and I was the product manager on Gmail. We were talking about, you know, how we might make money off of it. And I was like, oh, look, this is easy. We're going to give them small mailboxes for free and upsell them into larger mailboxes, because that's what everybody does. Paul's like, I'm not so sure. I think that maybe we should put ads on Gmail. And I was like, Paul, like, ads are never going to work. And I was like, because, you know, either we're going to run banner ads, and they're not going to be targeted, and people develop blind spots, and they're horrible in terms of effectiveness, and you know, we'll never make any money, and we'll just annoy our users. Or we're going to target the ads at their email, which is just going to be creepy and weird. Like, people are going to think there's people here reading their emails and picking out the ads. It's going to be terrible. And Paul's like, I'm not so sure. I think we could maybe do this. And I was like, Paul, like, you know, there's no way, right? Either you're going to have irrelevant ads, or you're going to have ads that cause a lot of privacy concerns. And we had this whole debate, and we went back to doing work. And around 3 a.m., Paul and I were, like, really night owls. We always came into the office late and stayed late. Around 3 a.m., I remember leaving. And I walked out the door, and as I walked out the door, I stopped for a minute, and I leaned back and stuck my head, and I was like, so we agreed, look, we didn't even have a mail reader that worked. There were six of us using it inside the company. It didn't really work. It crashed a lot. There were lots of problems. And I was like, okay, you know, we're not going to worry about money. Yeah, let's work on actually, like, sending, receiving, and reading email. Like, let's get that down first. So I remember I walked out the door, and I leaned back for a second, and I said, so Paul, we agreed we're not exploring the whole ad thing right now, right? And he was like, yeah. Right, and I leave, and I go home, and I sleep for a couple hours. I'm back in the office around 9, and I log into my email, because we were all using Gmail, so we'd understand the problems and how well it worked. Log into my email, ads everywhere, all over the page, right? And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, so Paul stayed up all night. He got a little semantic analyzer off the web that took emails, crystallized them down to a couple of keywords, and then he would do a keyword lookup on our database. Because remember, our ads database is coded towards search, so it comes in the form of, like, people say the keywords they want their ad to run on, and then they have the ad that they want to run. So we've got this whole database of keyword, ad. So Paul gets the keywords out of email using the semantic analyzer package that was sort of open source, takes those keywords, runs a lookup on those ads, gets those ads back, and then puts them on the page. And I was like, oh no. And I was like, I could tell Paul had been up until like 7 o'clock getting this prototype up. He had just gone home as I was getting into the office. And I was like, should I call him? Should I call him and, like, you know, and have him take it down? Because two of the other people who used the product were Larry and Sergey. And Larry and Sergey sometimes have, you know, weird views about, like, you know, privacy and what's creepy and what's not. And I was like, you know, what if they see this and they think it's great? Like, maybe we shouldn't have us be here. And so I thought, no, I'm going to let Paul sleep for another hour at least. So he gets a couple of hours of sleep before I ask him to turn the ads off. So it's 9 o'clock, and for the next hour I used the product, and I got an email from a friend who wanted to go hiking. And there was an ad for hiking boots. And Al Gore was coming to visit the campus that day, and there were books about Al Gore advertised in the side. And I thought, one, is it, you know, possibly useful in the case of the hiking boots, and two, like, it's at least kind of entertaining and relevant, right? Like, maybe it's not so bad after all. So by 10 o'clock, I no longer wanted Paul to take the ads down. I, you know, sort of starting to get a kick out of them. And then, of course, Larry and Sergey came in at 11, and they were like, this is great. And that's when we had the observation later that day that this didn't have to be about email, that Paul's technique of finding those keywords and doing this keyword lookup, which the model has evolved significantly since then, was something that would allow us to take the ads we ran on our search pages and run them on any page on the web. And so if you assume search is about 5% of web page views daily worldwide, which it roughly is, what AdSense really did was allowed us to run ads on the other 95% of page views. So it really, you know, brought up our business multifold. And so that was when we said, okay, you know, we're not sure if ads on Gmail are a good idea or not, but we do know that ads targeted content are a great idea. So let's go ahead and ramp that up, and that's what we ultimately did. So Gmail spawned the AdSense project, and of course AdSense was a shorter and simpler project. It launched first, and then Gmail launched second, but that's sort of how that whole business evolved.
So you hold office hours when people can come in and talk about product and product ideas. When someone comes in, let's say I come in and talk about a product, what are the questions you're going to ask me? What are the things you're looking for? How do you push that forward?
You know, it's very, I don't have a formula that I execute when people are showing me a prototype. Like, I usually let them show me what they want to show me. So, you know, I want them to take the demo in the order that, in the path that makes sense to them. I'll ask questions along the way. I'm usually looking for something, there's a couple things, I guess, that I look for. I, one, look for motivation on the part of the team. How committed are they to the idea? Because I think that, you know, we have very smart people here. And so if a smart person is really fired up about something, usually in a sort of John Stuart Mill way, there's a kernel of truth there, right? Like, it might not be totally obvious, but usually if they're that excited, there's something there. There's some good idea there. So I'm looking for that. So I'm looking for that motivation. I'm looking for insight. And, you know, not a me-too product, something insightful about the basis of the product or a feature of the product that makes it fundamentally different than something I've seen before. And I like things that capture my imagination, right? One of my favorite questions to ask people, be it applicants here or just other people, is, you know, what have you seen in the last 6 months? What was the coolest thing you saw in the last 6 months? Anything, you know, like something you read about, artwork, you know, a movie, just something that captured your imagination. So that's what I'm really looking for, is motivation, insight, and you know, differentiation, and then something that really captures my imagination or creativity, so...
We know you keep a very busy and often efficient schedule. One question that probably many people have is, what do you think about? What's the first thing that you think about, and what drives you every single morning once you wake up?
Or very inefficient, given that I'm so late to the interview. It's not clear which. What do I think about in the morning? I guess that mostly I think about the people here and how great they are. There's this great quote in the movie High Fidelity. I'm sure I'll bungle it, but, you know, John Cusack turns at one point to the camera, and he was like, I hired these guys 2 days a week, and they just started showing up every day. He's like, I can't fire them. I don't even pay them. And I think that's me. Like, I'm so excited to come and work here. I think that the Google mission is incredibly important. What we're trying to do for the world, the type of value that we add, is something that gives me a big sense of purpose. And I also think that the people here inspire me at such a level. So I'm eager to get into the office and do office hours and get to meet interesting people and see interesting new things and, you know, just see what it is that as a team we can achieve. And so those are the things that really get me motivated in the morning. So
cool. So the plan to open Google News for comments, how is that going to be kind of scalable in the long term? Is it also going to mean that the product is going to be more editorial?
So Google News is entirely generated by a computer. And we don't have human editors here. We obviously have engineers and people who work on the product, but we don't have a team of editors. What we've done with Google Comments, the news comments, is we actually want people to help us understand the context of the story. What do they know about the story? What's right in it? What's wrong about it? What should be questioned? And I think that, you know, that element, there is an element of editorialization. Editorial to me really means that there's a sort of a governing body or a governing viewpoint that's driving the agenda and selection and placement of stories. For us, the agenda, selection, and placement of stories is still going to be computer-generated. That said, we do think this human component can help fact-check, can sort of help question premises, and can help. You know, Google News, because it brings together so many different viewpoints, because of its clustered presentation, was really about giving people a lot of information and helping them discern from them for themselves the truth. And, you know, I really think that the Google News comments help the same thing happen. It's about how to bring together multiple viewpoints, how to bring together a lot of information, and help people think critically about those stories and what they're seeing and reading.
About a year ago, you were championing a metaphor called the Los Diego and San Angeles strategy. So it's mostly converging products like Gmail and Calendar together. How has that progressed, and do you think it has reached that state that you want it to be?
So I do think that we are experiencing overall product consolidation, and I do think that's a strong way to evolve a company, to try and understand what are the core key sort of pillars of strength in terms of a product suite, and then really build out features that reinforce that piece. And, you know, you look at most tech companies, and they usually do have, you know, sort of a few key pillars. Like Apple's a great example, right? They've got, you know, iTunes and iPod that work together now. They have the iPhone. They have their core hard, you know, desktop business. So, you know, at Google, we have search, we have ads, and we have apps. I think a big part of the app strategy is, in fact, Gmail. And, of course, then there's also the social networking piece. So there's a couple of big cores, And a lot of what we're working on is pulling together those feature sets so people don't have to go looking for the new feature. Oh, my mail and my calendar are in fact related. People mail me things to do and I put them on my calendar. But if I have to go looking for the calendar product, if it's not built in simply as a feature to Gmail, that's a problem. I think that the Gmail integration with Calendar is particularly nice, and they're working now to even make it more and more direct over time. But you've probably seen the feature where it actually will parse your emails and try and take a guess at the date and the time. And they put a little box on the side that says, would you like to put this on your calendar? So they've done a really nice, elegant job there, but they're evolving that more over time. But I do think that some of our heaviest calendar users are Gmail users, and it was the Gmail usage that fostered that calendar usage.
So if you had a blog, what would you blog about?
If I had a blog, what would I blog about? I would probably blog about innovation and design. And I just really think that one of the coolest parts of my job is that I get to just see so many interesting things. I get to travel a lot. I get to meet a lot of interesting people. And so, and I just find, like, wonder in everyday products. Like, I went out to eat with my friend the other day, and she has a little boy, and she had this great sort of, it was one of those static stickers, but it was a placemat that had a Sesame Street characters on it. So she literally, like, took this. We were at a pizza parlor in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., and she stuck it down on the table, and, like, you know, Ben made a horrible mess all over the table. And at the end of it, you know, we just, like, peeled the static sticker up, like, put it in the ball, threw it in the trash. Like, it was, like, the easiest cleanup, like, with a baby in a restaurant ever. And I just thought, like, that's just genius, right? I mean, like, static stickers are sort of always cool. They're kind of always useful. But, like, this is, like, a great killer application for static stickers, right? Like, child placemats. Because it doesn't, you know, the placemat doesn't shift around, which is hundreds of problems for kids. Like, you know, it has all these bright characters that keep them occupied, right? So I find little things like that. So I would probably, be it household things, technologies that I see, I would be blogging about those types of things that are either clever in design, clever in technology, clever in innovation that I get to see. Because I just get to, I get to find a lot of really cool things.
What are you most proud of till this day?
Well, on a global level, I'm really proud of Google. I think that when I think about, you know, what it's done for people, the type of information they're able to find about education or jobs or health, connecting people, you know, helping you find someone you haven't been able to find, you know, those are things that I think really matter to people. And so I'm proud of the role that Google has played for helping people find information, and also for the internet, because I think that one thing, you know, in many ways, Google has helped the internet grow because pages can be found. No one would create pages if you couldn't find new pages, and, you know, by having a great search technology, it's ultimately caused the internet to continue to grow at its torrid pace, which, who knows, like, maybe if there hadn't been great search, it would have sort of slowed because people would have been less motivated to generate content. So I think, you know, Google overall on the global level is probably what I'm most proud of.
You recently went on a worldwide trip with the newest batch of associate product managers.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some fun stories or interesting dilemmas you guys had?
Well, the associate trip every year is a great trip. And we learn a lot about our users, our advertisers, technology in different countries. We also learn a lot about each other. And so it's become a rite of passage. It used to be that we would just go to one destination, then we'd go to a couple destinations, and now it's like a rite of passage that we do a westbound, round-the-world trip. I've heard eastbound is awful from the jet lag perspective, so we always go westbound. So this year we went to Tokyo, to Beijing. We had dinner in Bangkok with a long layover, Bangalore, India, and Tel Aviv, Israel, and we also made a quick trip up to our Haifa office. So, and, you know, what I think is great there is, one, you get to see how technology is really different in other places and what people are doing with it. We were blown away by Tel Aviv, the startups that are there, the technologies that they're using, the way they use Web 2.0 and Ajax, and it's amazing. They're building, like, I was very, very impressed with the technology that we saw there. But, you know, it's also a great opportunity to see how Google is used and perceived. Like, as I said, it was really eye-opening in India to see people viewing, you know, our biggest value add in India isn't the Google search engine, it's Orkin, the product. So that was, you know, a whole different culture to experience just from that perspective of how Google is perceived. And there's also just a lot of fun because we get to know each other a lot better. So I'm always looking, you know, I call myself the associate product manager, APM coordinator. They call me the den mother. And I prefer coordinator. And it's really fun to see them bond and, you know, and just sort of some things that happen. Like, one of the associates He's sort of a little bit more self-conscious. We were in India. We were doing some Bhangra dancing, and he's sort of on the edge, kind of going through the motions and not really participating. At some point, the music totally picked up, and, you know, someone yelled, you know, called out his name. It was like, devil time! And he jumped into the middle of the circle, and for the next 3 or 4 minutes, I think it's probably because we're all sleep-deprived and we're in other countries, and you sort of just forget yourself. For the next 4 minutes, he was the most amazing Bhangra dancer I've ever seen, right? Because it was just sort of like somehow that all that sort of, you know, in, you know, all of that sort of self-consciousness and insecurity just melted away, and it was just amazing. So that was great. And also just seeing the friendships and the bonds that are formed between people. That same night I was sitting on a couch at the outskirts of the party at one point, and one of the associates flopped down next to me, and one of the team members had left the team because his grandfather lived in India and was ill. And Eric said to me, I miss Pram. And I thought that, you know, and I said, oh, I was like, yeah, an Indian dance party with Pram would be pretty fun. And he was like, yeah, it really would be. And I thought that was just so great to see them sort of like missing each other and sort of having that kind of bond that, you know, they really, you know, start to care about the other associates because we try and build a strong community and network for them. So I love the APM trip. One, because I get to see new things. Like, for me, Israel was totally new this year. I had never been there. The other place I had been before, I hadn't been to Israel. And I was just blown away by the technology. Also, just by the fact that, like, Tel Aviv is a beach town. And I sort of, I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe I thought it'd be more like New York, but it's this wonderful beach town, which I thought was great. But also just because, you know, for these people who I've hired and trained and managed for a year, getting to see them in a different light, and then also getting to see, you know, some of the bonding that happens on the trip and just some of them breaking out of their shells is really exciting for me.
If you were to leave Google tomorrow, not that you're going to, but what would you do next?
If I left Google tomorrow, we'll see. So I'm a part owner in a bakery up in the city.
What is it called?
I Dream of Cake. So I have this amazing business partner, Shinmin Lee, who is becoming like the Vera Wang of cake. She makes these really incredible sculptural cakes. And so, like, she made for one of my friend's sons, she made a Lego truck because he's really into Legos and she's really into trucks. So she made an actual Lego truck, like complete with Lego people and everything, made out of marzipan. she did that. She's like made, you know, I'm a big fan of Chewy glass. She made me a Chewy cake where she actually blew sugar to look like, you know, Dale Chewy's glass forms. So she does a great job, and I think, you know, so probably for a couple of weeks I'd like park myself at the bakery helping to make cakes and sort of, you know, getting my bearings. But I think after that I would go and start a technology company or join a technology company, because I do think that I really love building consumer products, and I think that I, you know, really love computers, computer science, technology, and I want to continue to participate in that.
Who are your mentors?
I've been lucky in that I have a lot of mentors, and I have, you know, to my earlier point about investing, working for people who invest in you, I've been really lucky. So all along, I've worked for people who really have invested in me. So Eric Roberts at Stanford, you know, picked me up, encouraged me to be a section leader, encouraged me to become a TA, then encouraged me to become a lecturer, encouraged me to participate in the Bermuda Project to write a CS curriculum, computer science curriculum for the country of Bermuda. That was something that was amazing. But here, you know, I have, you know, Eric, Larry, Sergey, Jonathan, you know, there's a whole support structure here of people who continually trust me with new responsibility, coach me on how to handle it better. And I also have others like Bill Campbell is one of my management coaches, and he does a great job. So I'm really lucky in that I'm surrounded by really impressive and supportive people.
Well, Marissa, I want to be conscious of your time, but thank you for the interview.
Thanks.
Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.